Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Sedano with you here at 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. There he is, Byron Scott, Lakers legend, joining us here, friend of the program. Byron, first of all, how's everybody doing? Everybody safe and healthy?
George, how you doing, first of all? Everybody is safe and healthy. Just doing what our governor is talking about doing, which is staying home. And we're having a lot of fun doing it, to be honest with you. Not getting bored, so everything's good.
Yeah, I hear you. Look, the interesting part of this is that it does give us a little more family time that we probably would have never gotten, right? Like, that's the silver lining, I look, at this particular point.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it gives you a chance also to reflect on a lot of things that's going on in your everyday life. And, you know, for me, it's really gave me a chance to just slow down, you know, just sit still for a minute and you know, like you said, enjoy the family time that you have.
Yeah, slow down is a perfect word for it, right? Because we were definitely running. We were all sprinting in life, and you need to, every once in a while, you need to stop, take a deep breath, smell the fresh air, and boy, is there a lot of fresh air right now, Byron, without 15 million cars on the road. We went from the worst air quality in America to the best air quality in America in a month. It's kind of nice, yeah. I got to be honest.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I'm sitting at home, and I'm in Hermosa Beach, so I'm looking outside, and you know, I've never seen this far, and the air this clear. You know, I can see the ocean, and it seems like I could see forever. So the air quality right now is the best it's ever been since I've been here. I know that.
It's pretty crazy. Byron, so obviously everyone was watching the Last Dance documentary yesterday. You know, there's so many aspects to this. But, you know, Magic was in there talking about he could see Michael coming and Larry and all these guys, right? Pat Riley, your coach. How did you view him when he entered the league?
Well, when he first entered the league, I viewed him as just an unbelievable talented player that had very few weaknesses. I think his only weakness that I thought of at that time was that he was very inconsistent with his jump shot. But it wasn't that you could say, let's force him this way or that way, because he could do either way. You're going to his left or going to his right very effectively. Get to the basket, he could, you know, he could dunk on you, or he can go around you and you reverse it. I mean, he was just so good and so gifted that I know in his early part of his career when I had to guard him, you know, I remember one day telling Rouse, because he wanted to deny him everywhere, just don't let him get the ball. But you know, he was so smart and he understood the game so well that if you did that, then he's going to go back door. So I suggested, let me just let him catch it and let me just play off and force him to shoot jump shots. And that particular game, it worked pretty well. He went 6 for 26, but it didn't work. It didn't work that well after that, because he started being able to hit shots on a consistent basis. And when he started doing that, it was just, you know, he had no weaknesses. You just hoped he missed shots. It was almost like guarding Kareem, I'm sure, from a center standpoint, where when he turned for that sky hook, you just hoped he missed, because there wasn't nothing you could do about it. Well, same thing with MJ. You know, once he elevated and he was falling away already, you know, all you could do is hope he missed.
Take me back to that series, Byron, where you guys are playing them in the NBA Finals. You know, what's funny now is because, you know, we're so long removed now from that, you know, you guys were the favorite in that series, and they were looked at as the villains, like the young team trying to steal what you guys owned, right? Like, it was kind of weird the way those dynamics worked back then that people don't remember.
Yeah, I never looked at them as the villain. I just looked at them as a young, up-and-coming team that had, you know, went through their battles with Detroit and Boston, and sometimes you got to lose those battles before you can win the war. And I think they had got a lot of scars from previous series that really got them primed for this particular series, you know, when we played them in the finals. You know, unfortunately for us, you know, James wasn't 100%. You know, his knee was bothering him. I got hurt in, I think, game one. Mm-hmm. And didn't play the rest of that series. But that team was, they were driven. They were hungry. They were primed, you know, to win a championship. And at that particular point, you know, Michael had already, you know, arrived. You know, he had already been, you know, looked at as one of the best, if not the best player in the NBA at that time. And they kind of looked at him. I think, you know, the other MJ, Magic, my boy, and Larry is the guy who was going to take the torch. And then you had Scotty, who was, you know, starting to arrive as well. So I think at that particular time, that team was just primed. They were hungry. And it was just no stopping them at that time.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's no question. I mean, you guys got game one. And, I know you guys were dinged up, but you had to feel at least confident that you had a chance. Because game three went to overtime. Like, I remember it. Yeah. You guys had a chance to really take a lead in that series.
Yeah. I mean, we knew we had a chance. It was just a matter of, you know, we had to have some things go right. And, game three, like you said, we had a great opportunity to win that game, and we didn't win that game. And I think from their standpoint, the Bulls, when they took game three and went up 2-1, it was like, listen, let's put our foot on their necks, which is the way we thought as well. You know, if we had a team down, you know, let's put our foot on their necks and let's press it down. Let's not let up. And they went on to win the next two games.
You know what happened, though, in that series is that, you know, you had a lot of big men there, and they were a perimeter-oriented team. You know, so you had some dead weight, like that Michael Thompson guy, you know what I'm saying, who barely played in that series.
Yeah, you know what? You know, every team has their dead weight. You know, every team goes through that, you know. So RMT, you know, Michael Thompson, as much as I give him crap, you know, he's still one of the best. I swear to God, one of the best, you know, acquisitions Jerry West made was bringing that guy to our team, because he gave us that inside presence on the defensive end, and he could guard pretty much anybody defensively on the post. I mean, he was really so good defensively, it was scary. But, yeah, that series, like I said, you know, as good as we were, you know, we were banged up and we were getting of age, and that team was that young, you know, aggressive, hungry, you know. Scotty, I remember Scotty picking up Magic 94 feet. I mean, just, you know, you could just see that they were just probably, as much as we wanted it, they probably wanted it a little bit more.
Byron Scott joining us here, Laker great here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. And, you know, then after that, you went to Indiana and you had to face them again in the postseason a number of times.
You know what? I enjoyed the, you know, facing them just twice a year. Then I go to Indiana, I got to face them four times. You know, so I got to see MJ on four different occasions every year for the next two or three years. But it was fun. It was fun because we had a really good team in Indiana. Obviously, you know, the Bulls were great. The one year that he, you know, retired and then he came back, his first game was against us, you know, in Indiana, and we beat him on national TV. But you know, if you're a competitor, and we had one of the great competitors too, Reggie Miller. I mean, you talk about a guy that, you know, as we called him Thin Man, you talk about a guy who got up for MJ. I mean, he looked forward to the challenge because he knew, just like we all knew, you're playing against the best.
Oh, you know, Byron.
So look forward to that challenge.
The trash talk between those two must have been epic. Like, man, what was that like to be on the floor with those guys?
You know, you knew both of them was going to. The thing about MJ, he didn't talk trash until you started. And now, once you started, you know, he was going to go in and you'll go all in. And Reggie, he was going to talk no matter what. You don't have to start with Reggie. Reggie's going to talk, you know, and that was just him. So just those two guys going at each other and talking, and you knew the offense was focused around those two. You know, we focused our offense in Indiana around Reggie Miller because he was so damn good. And obviously the same thing in Chicago with MJ, even though the triangle, you're not supposed to be able to just really focus on one guy. But you have ways in the triangle offense of manipulating where that ball is going to be and whose hand is going to be in. So you knew it was going to be MJ's hand. And so those two guys going at it was man, it was – you almost would almost stop playing just to listen to them. I mean, you know, you had to realize that, you know, wait a minute, we're playing against these guys. We got to keep playing. But just to listen to those two go at it, and there was no blood loss between those two. I mean, they really, really went at each other every single time they played.
Byron Scott joining us here, Laker great here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. When he retired, though, and came back, that I know that's the season when you were in Indiana, you guys lost to the Magic in a seven-game series. They end up Shaq and Penny go to the NBA Finals and lose to the Rockets. Did you think, I mean, you said you guys beat him in your first game back, or in his first game back. Like, did you think he was still going to be Michael Jordan at that point, though?
Yeah, I did. I mean, he only took a year off, and it was still in his prime. So when he came back, he was rusty, you know, when we played him on that afternoon. You could tell, though, that he was going. It was going to take him a week or two, and he was going to be the same old MJ that we knew. And I think it happened probably about a week later, where he was in Madison Square Garden and just tore them up. So we knew it wasn't going to take him long. It wasn't like he sat out 2 or 3 years. He sat out for basically a year. And you know, that competitive nature that he has, we knew wasn't going to let him, you know, let that last long. So I think we all knew that he was going to be the same Michael Jordan he was before he left for baseball when he came back.
Byron, you know what I felt like? I felt like that documentary for young people, right, was educational in a lot of ways, but particularly for Laker fans, because you're seeing the guy Kobe wanted to emulate. You know, you were around Kobe as a young man. You coached him. Like, what kind of similarities could you draw between those two guys?
Well, I'm telling you this, George. People that are watching this documentary of Michael and seeing how driven he was, seeing how he treated his teammates, seeing how he pushed his teammates, you're looking at, you know, Kobe, whatever, 10, 20 years ago. I mean, that was him, not to the point where he berated his player, but he challenged guys. He wanted to know, you know, and I'm talking about Kobe, he wanted to know who he can be in a foxhole with. You know, he wanted to know who he could go to war with. And he was going to test you every single day of practice. And that was MJ. You know, a really good friend of mine, Daryl Walker, who played with Chicago, used to tell me stories that, man, this dude would punch people in practice, you know, but he did it to find out who he can go to war with. You know, he wanted to test your heart. And great leaders, you know, have different mentalities out there on the court during practice. You know, Irvin, Magic Johnson, it wasn't like that. He would jump on you, but he did it in a way where he was really trying to encourage you to get the best out of you, and that worked for him, and it worked for us. You know, MJ was totally different, you know, and both guys are, you know, extremely successful. So, you know, when you're looking at this documentary, this is you're looking at a lot of what Kobe Bean Bryant was all about, and that's basically who he learned from was Michael Jordan. So you watching, you know, two of the greatest that ever played a game, and how they really went into every practice, went into every game, how they prepared mentally as well as physically, how they challenged themselves and their teammates and their coaches and front office. I mean, those guys didn't leave anybody out. You know, nobody was everybody was vulnerable to get, you know, a tongue lashing from those guys. So that's how you have to look at it.
So you're telling me that Kobe Bryant almost maybe one day might have thought about punching Marcelo Huertas or some Ryan Kelly or someone like that?
Yeah, if they would have messed up in practice to a certain extent where he was on their team, yeah, you know. I saw him throw elbows to guys in practice. But again, he would throw elbows sometimes and hit you in the chest and then wink at the other guys who was in front of him just to see if he can get a reaction out the guy. I mean, that was just Kobe. You know, again, he wanted to find out who he can go to war with.
For sure. Byron with us here. Byron Scott, Laker great. When were you aware of their relationship? Because, I mean, I don't know how many of us knew what the depths of their relationship was until Michael talked at the memorial service. But, you know, you were around him. Did you know that those two were pretty close?
No, I didn't. George, I mean, that was, you know, MJ talking about, you know, the phone calls and the conversations that they had at the memorial. I was sitting there like, wow, I didn't know their relationship was that tight. And you could tell it was that tight. When you looked at MJ at the memorial and how he was crying and the heartfelt messages that he said and the things that he said about KB as his little brother and, you know, the advice that he would give him, and you could tell that they had a relationship that lasted for a while, you know, and I don't think a lot of people knew that. You know, obviously Michael didn't make it known and Kobe didn't go around bragging on his relationship with Michael Jordan. It was just something that those two had between themselves. And you could tell they talked a lot about basketball and probably about life in general. So it was really good to hear, you know, some of those stories from Michael, you know, about his conversations with Kobe. And again, like you said, I had no clue they were that close, but it was really great to hear.
Byron Scott, Laker great, joining us here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. Byron, it's great to catch up with you again. I'm glad everyone's safe and sound, and hopefully we can catch up again soon.
George, anytime, my man, and make sure you stay inside as much as possible, too, and keep enjoying the family.
Will do, sir. Take care. Great talking to you again, my friend.
You too, George.
There he is, Byron Scott, Laker great with us here.